Welcome, welcome to Paradigm Shifters. We have a wonderful and familiar to some of you Paradigm Shifter joining us, someone who's quite a political wizard as well as being funny as can be. So you get to be smart and funny. Welcome to the show, Steve Behrman.
Well, thank you so much, Veronica, for what you're doing to help move the great upwising forward, where we wake up and wise up.
Well, you and Swami Beyond Ananda are really making a difference talking to people about upwising and about waking up. Let's get to work on you. What are you doing these days that are, or what do you think of, let me see, Charlottesville? Is that a good way to start?
Yeah, Charlottesville. I've been to Charlottesville many times. I love the town of Charlottesville. It's a college town, University of Virginia. I've performed at the Thomas Jefferson Unitarian Church there. And it's quite a wonderful place. And unfortunately, because of the way that Donald Trump has essentially given permission to racism to come out of the woodwork, where it's been, it hasn't gone anywhere. Probably 25 to 30% of the people in this country, no matter what Donald Trump did or said, they would support him.
Why is that, Steve?
Because his message resonates with their training. It resonates with what the political philosopher and linguist George Lakoff calls the father principle. It resonates with the dominant patriarchy. And when people feel endangered, they want protection. They want to go back to what's familiar. And if we look at what's happened, not just the first black president, but also what's happened in terms of acceptance of gay rights and new sexes, new gender definitions,
yeah,
and that sort of thing.
Designer gender.
It's really put people who are coming from a traditionalist point of view into some severe fear. 2 years ago, I started a correspondence with somebody I won't name, but he's one of my baseball heroes from the 1950s and 60s when I was a kid. And I always knew he was a religious fundamentalist and so on. And I had gotten to a correspondence with him because I just wanted to find out more about how he was able to maintain his faith and essentially his principles, while a young man in a major league uniform. And as we got to speak and got to know each other, I could really feel how he was feeling. He's a guy maybe 80 years old. He was feeling how he is in a world that is so unfamiliar to him, that even the traditional sport of baseball now had an emissary of diversity who was an ex-baseball player who was came out of a closet as gay. And, to people who are used to this traditional, well, men look like this and women look like that, and here are the traditional sex roles and so on, it's frightening to them that their entire reality has been turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
You enhance that with Fox News brainwashing over many years. And then there's another factor, and that factor is something that the progressives must own responsibility for, and that is toxic political correctness. I'll give you an example. A friend of mine just he had an administrative position at a graduate school in psychology in a big Midwest city. And he left that job a couple of years ago, didn't really want to stress. And so after a couple of years, he decided he's going to return to teaching. He always loved teaching. So he takes a teaching position again at this graduate school in psychology. And what he finds out is totally disturbing. He is being yelled at and assaulted as a white man that he has no business teaching, as a white man, and that he has to be mindful of all of these, what they're called, mini aggressions. And mini aggressions are things that people say without really knowing that they're offensive to people of color, to people who are various hyphenated minorities, who have ironically gotten status in the progressive domain because of their lack of status everywhere else. And so, you know, I think that if
so, when you said people are yelling at him, was it students? Was it
students?
Yeah,
students are
okay.
yelling at him because he doesn't happen to be gay. He's a white guy, and they don't want to listen to him. They don't want to do anything that he says. It's a graduate school, and so something.
Is it mostly black or mostly African American or mostly Asian or what?
Well, I would say that it's probably a diversity of colors and also of sexual preferences, and that you got to know the difference between, well, bisexual or trisexual, let's try anything, polyamorous.
Yeah,
and I go,
that's
hey,
a big
what
deal.
You're going to do with a consenting parrot is none of my business. So the point is that that has gotten completely out of hand. And something that happened to me about 7 years ago that was a devastating experience. I was doing a presentation, a comedy show, at a retreat for people who are political activists. And I'd worked with this one leader, coach before, and we'd had great times, and they always appreciated the Swami. But this one time, there was one woman in particular in the audience who turned against me. And she was very, she tried to turn the entire audience against me. She didn't like, first of all, that I was doing the song for peace in the Middle East. You say salam and I say shalom. You throw a bomb, I blow up your home. You like that.
Oh, wow.
Which was very popular with the Jewish-Palestinian Reconciliation Group I had done it for. But she took it upon herself that the Palestinians are always right and the Israelis are always wrong. And so she took exception to that. And then, of course, she took exception to the idea that I was performing in the guise of an East Indian teacher. And that, of course, is supposed to be offensive to people from India. Of course, I've been doing this for 30 years. And every time somebody from India is in the audience, they come up to me and they go, oh, that was really very smart, very wise. I love that. You know, they love it because they recognize I'm not making fun of them. So after turning the audience against me, after the show, she made everybody in the group, not me, form a circle to support her. I was excluded intentionally from the circle. And those people who laughed at my comedy had to recant.
Oh, wow. Really?
And then we had our...
And
our
did they? Were they willing?
Well, of course, most of them did because of the peer pressure. And I lost a friend. I lost my friendship with the guy who organized this because he could not stop this from happening. He could not intervene. And then at the end, we had our sales table set up, and somebody from the group came up to me and said, I think you better leave now.
Wow. Did you?
Well, of course we left, you know, and then, of course, people came up to us individually and whispered, that was really funny. I loved it.
Aww.
So I'm saying that there is a kind of fascism that doesn't recognize itself as such that has focused so much attention on these identity issues that the identical issues that we face, which is clean air, clean water, clean food, clean soil, not being targeted by our police, not being in wars overseas, all of these things that really impact us on a much more fundamental and identical level get ignored as the culture wars continue and people on both sides throw up barricades out of fear and misunderstanding.
And don't you think that we are, as a culture, making it less and less safe, for example, just to get a job and raise your kids, and this society isn't particularly safe, and that's got to raise a lot of ire and a lot of anger in people who are seeking reasons for that oppression or that abuse. Don't you think it kind of all mingles with that?
Yes, it reminds me of Catherine Austin Fitz, and Catherine was an HUD, Housing and Urban Development official during the Bush and Clinton years. She's a conservative. And she resigned because of some of the corruption she saw. And she talks about what she calls the popsicle index.
Hmm.
And the popsicle index is how safe is it for your child to go down to the corner to buy a popsicle from the ice cream stand?
That's good. It isn't.
You know, and I'm remembering when I was a kid in the 1950s in Brooklyn, New York, in a really, really rough neighborhood on a market street, very, very busy with buses and trolley cars and trucks and push carts and horse, everything there, teeming with people. I'm 5 years old, and I decide to go down the street to the bakery to complain because my dad didn't like the bagels the night before.
Oh.
So at 5 years old, I am completely safe in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm completely known by everybody on the block. They know who I belong to. They know who I am. And I'm completely safe, you know, and that wasn't that long ago. So at this point, as you say, as people begin to feel less safe, they begin to
But also project. They're less identified. You used the term identity. That we're less identified in any kind of acceptable norm, too, right?
Well, I think that what happened was people were naturally identified. You know, I mean, I...
Middle
on
school,
our,
yeah.
Yeah, our, on our street, you know, with, you know, all kinds of people, Jewish people, Puerto Rican people, Italian people. It was, you know, black people. And because of that, of a more natural diversity, rather than an enforced diversity where you force people to mingle and then you don't really enable it, you simply leave them there to work it out. You know, it's what happens is people end up feeling less safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I moved to another neighborhood, to a housing project, where I was a minority as a white kid, I was less safe because I was in the minority. Then I had to figure out ways to protect myself. And I used humor. I was pretty effective at that. But nonetheless, you're still adrenalized when you walk down the street and you have to avoid trouble. And it's very similar to what black people experience simply living their lives, driving their cars and trying to not make it look like they're up to something bad. So we've had this intensification of fear. We've had this intensification of polarization. We've had this intensification of projection on the other. As the more the emotional, more the emotional disturbance intensifies, then the more people are looking for somebody outside. It's like, don't you want somebody to blame? Don't you need somebody to blame? You know, like that.
But also, I think financially, too, I mean, the split between have and have not and the reduction of the middle class, that has left a lot of people with a different kind of angst, too, or a growing angst, don't you think?
You know, in the
and
old
a rage, yeah.
When I was a kid, you know, the baseball players from the Brooklyn Dodgers, they lived in neighborhoods. You know, Jackie Robinson lived in Queens, and Gil Hodges lived in Brooklyn. And they weren't making that much money. They weren't, like, making millions of dollars. And so there was a sense of community and connection and identification. And, you know, they were better off than we were, but they weren't that better off. They still had to have jobs in the off season, many of them.
And so what
we have now over the past, and I date it back to 1976. And 1976 was the year that Milton Friedman won the Nobel Prize in economics. And Milton Friedman was famous for saying that the only purpose of a corporation is to make money for its shareholders, period. And so what's happened is that that gave the unchecked, unbalanced, unmitigated power of money carte blanche to overrule everything else. And that is how the rule of gold has overruled the golden rule.
Aww.
And this has happened in every level of society to the point where if you're offered a job and the job involves exploitation or lying, as a friend of mine was offered a job by a PR agency that was the ones that produced the propaganda for the Iraq war. And she refused a job. And her friend said, don't be a fool. If you don't take that job, somebody else will. Why don't you take the job and just go along? And so what happens is the moral constraints that we had when we were much more of a society that was interknit through community and through traditional religion, with all of the problems that traditional religion has brought, there was at least a fundamental appreciation of the golden rule, a fundamental appreciation of treating others the way you would like to be treated. And of course, we've always had sociopaths, a certain 7 to 10% of the population.
Right.
But when we have sociopathic institutions, like Enron was, and like, unfortunately, many aspects of our own government is, then people who work for those institutions must necessarily take on sociopathic traits that Swami calls this ethic cleansing, where the ethical people have been cleansed out of the government.
Wow. Yeah. Well, so so Trump comes in because we have lost faith in protection in one another. Would you say that so much deterioration and so much hierarchy, and people don't know where else to go, and they don't trust the government?
Well, I think that's all a confluence of many, many things. First of all, I think that the right wing has been creating this drumbeat through Fox News, through Rush Limbaugh, through those kinds of characters for a generation or more, for 25 or 30 years, that's been saying that government is bad, government is bad, government is bad. And if you think about what government really is government really is we the people protecting ourselves against threats external and internal.
Right.
However, during the Clinton administration, something happened. The Democratic Party, which used to be our protector and mitigator of the excesses of toxic capitalism, became just another go-along corporate party. And so what happened then is the Democrats, to keep their constituency, they basically began to foster identity politics. Women, black people, Latinos, anyone else who's been marginalized. And by defending these people and aggregating them into a group, the Democrats are able to or have been able to maintain their for a while majority. However, what happened with Obama, the failure of hopium, the hopium wore off when Obama bailed out Wall Street and ignored Main Street.
That's right. He did.
And the Democrats shifted their brand to vote for us. We're not as bad as the other guys. So what happened in this particular election?
But wait. I want to ask you this. Bernie received tons and tons more respect and attention than Hillary did, but he was dumped off the roster. And I'm like, that was another thing that kind of knocked people for a loop.
Well, and I think a lot of that normally in normal years, that would have been the way that the Democrats operated and people would have gone along. And last year, they didn't go along with that. And I think it was basically and of course, the Democrats, their Democratic Party establishment has continued to fail to learn that lesson. The Democrats are kind of like in the Peanuts comic strip, Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown every time he goes to kick it. And so that's what they did. And they did it again this past year. The other thing that happened, so first of all of the enthusiastic support for Bernie on the part of millennials totally evaporated for Hillary. You know, and I was one of the people who said, okay, well, we have to choose, at least give ourselves a chance by choosing Hillary, even though I didn't like Hillary.
I said the same thing.
But that's
but bottom line, it wasn't only millennials. There's an awful broad spectrum of people who were standing with Bernie and still do.
Well, that's true. And so a lot of people decided, the millennials in particular, because they don't like the idea of choosing a lesser evil, whereas we older people have been so used to choosing the lesser evil that we went along with that program. Mm-hmm. And so this year, while we were, you know, looking for reasons to vote for Hillary, on the other side, there was enough well-founded mistrust in the mainstream media, that was fomented by the alternative right, but certainly reason to mistrust the mainstream press, not so much for its bold-faced lying, which is what Fox News does, mm-hmm. but because of its withholding of news mm-hmm. and making sure that all the news fits the current narrative and things that are uncomfortable, like the Kennedy assassination mm-hmm. or the possibility that 9/11 was an inside job mm-hmm. or many of the other perpetrations of the corporate state were marginalized and ignored. And enough people woke up on the right to recognize the perpetrations of what Peter Dale Scott calls the deep state mm-hmm. that they said they began to imagine, and I use the word imagine because it's totally imaginary, that Donald Trump would represent the American people and stand up to the deep state, mm-hmm. which, of course, when you look at Donald Trump and who he really represents, totally absurd and ridiculous idea.
I thought it was interesting that so many white women voted for Donald Trump as well. Talk about identity. It's like, whoa, what does that mean?
Well, I think it's because I have a friend here in Santa Rosa who is, I think she's very astute. You know, she's a healer. And she said, oh, I voted for Donald Trump. And I went, what? What? Why did she, how'd you do that? She says, well, I was watching them on TV and I looked at the two of them. And Donald Trump, to my heart, was more honest than Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
And I've talked to other people who had that same take, that when Donald Trump pointed to Hillary and says, this is how a politician speaks, everyone who has ever disrespected a politician recognized the truth of that, mm-hmm. that there wasn't a sincere word that came out of her mouth, that everything was message tested. And with Trump, you saw somebody who is spontaneous, who represented the regular people who are going, why are you pretending that the radical Islamists are not radical Islamists? Why are you pretending that? Why don't you call them what they are? And, you know, if you happen to be a progressive, you're simply expected to look past the shadow of those people who are supposedly on your own side. That's the lesser evil mentality. And so where we are now is we actually have a greater evil at the helm. However, that greater evil much more truly represents the toxicity that the American empire has become than a nicey-nicey face like Obama.
Mm-hmm. It gets really sort of... like I watch all this stuff that's going on and I go, well, where do we go from here? I mean, this is so awful that I actually have horrible desires for Mr. Trump. And that's not my style. You know, I am a hero.
Well, you know, the Swami always wants to be empathetic. And he says, well, you know, Trumpty Dumpty, he's had a rough summer. So let us all wish him a great fall.
I'm up for that. Thank
well,
you,
I think
Swami.
We are. I think that he has no business being president. No. However, you cannot separate the leader from the toxic the toxic soup that has been cooking.
Yeah.
And that and what happened is political correctness tries to put a lid on what people are feeling. It tries to stop them from communicating. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, and if you've been in a relationship, sometimes there has to be some really hard communications and really tough things to say and things that really are hard to hear in order to get close enough so that those things can get healed. So if you can't speak your truth, if you can't speak your truth, then it's going to come out in all of these ways.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that's very, very interesting. I saw an article today that pointed this out, that, you know, you want to look at the guy that drove the car into the demonstrators and killed a person.
Right.
This should not come as a surprise, but he has a history of domestic abuse. His mother is wheelchair bound, and she has had to call the police to protect herself against him.
Mm-hmm. A number of times, too, I read.
The other perpetrators, like the so-called Bernie supporter who shot the Republican congressman, the guy that shot up people in the gay nightclub in Orlando,
mm-hmm.
the guy who initiated the bombing in Paris last year,
mm-hmm.
on and on and on. You read about these people. All of these perpetrators of violence have a history of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who have a history of violence, this is not going to be surprising, these are people who have generally had violence perpetrated upon them. So if we want to really
Hitler and people like that. Mm-hmm.
Hitler got hit. Mm-hmm. That's why I call it Hitler. but really, in order to really, really address the problem, you know, somebody once said that all political is personal and all personal is political. Bruce Lipton, my partner in Spontaneous.
Actually, I like that, Steve. I like that.
Oh, personal is political, political is personal.
Yeah.
Bruce Lipton, biologist, my co-author in Spontaneous Evolution, talks about the fractal, and the fractal is the repeating patterns at different levels of complexity. So in a family, you have a child that's physically abused. On a larger scale, that child goes to school, becomes a bully, gets involved with a gang, gets involved with other people who collectively abuse. And then on and on. They may even, a lot of these, if you look at the very toxic patriarchy of Wahhabi brand of Islam that has fomented so much of this terrorism, you find that it's a patriarchal, women-hating, women-misunderstanding, totally unbalanced, narrow-minded, violent, and hateful theology. And so it's not surprising that it's going to be perpetrating these things on a larger scale. So if we want to prevent these things at the larger scale, it's really important to intervene on the early scale. You know, and if kids are involved in Nazism as a high school kids, as this kid was, then I think it's important that there's an intervention,
mm-hmm.
that other people in the community begin to find ways to either do what they did in the more primitive cultures and tribes, that when somebody was a perpetrator, they would surround this individual, they would pray, they would project love, and they would do everything they could to bring him inside the heart of that community.
Right.
But we live in a society where we've moved from the front porch to the backyard. Mm-hmm. And so those things that go on our streets are none of our business until they become our business.
Well, they're definitely our business right now, because you and I know that there's a steaming and seeping kind of defensive rage rising. But I know a lot of people in the spiritual world that are trying to pray it out, right? Trying to send the light out there. And it's just so overwhelming. Violent thoughts myself. That's not my...
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge the violent thoughts. And I think humor is a really, really good way to do that. I part of the reason why I'm doing what I do, and we have our Going Sane tour, you know, where we're looking to help perpetuate sanity, is that if you're able to release some of the tension and energy through laughter, it creates the capacity to hold greater love. And, you know, we're not trying to prematurely ascend people. You know, I don't really like I don't like spiritual pretense. You know, and I'm sure that...
I mean, like, you know, posturing and I'm better than you and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and all that. I'm more evolved than you are.
Yeah.
The fact is that we're all susceptible to all of this. And Ken Wilber just put out a book. He wrote a brilliant article right after the election that explained Donald Trump's election in terms of the progressives being blind to their own intolerance of intolerance.
Ah, that's interesting.
And in creating a relativistic, you know, neoliberalism is a relativistic thing. You know, I believe what I believe, you believe what you believe, and blah, blah, blah. However, you can't have that and have no standard for what's positive, what's good, and what's beautiful, and have no standard for that, and then try to backtrack and tell people who you disagree with they can't have free speech.
Mm-hmm.
It harkens back to Plato, and I like Plato's representation of the iterations of love on a physical, spiritual, and mental level.
Yeah, I don't know truth, what they are.
Truth, beauty, and goodness.
Ah, okay.
So if it is truthful, if it's beautiful, and if it's good, then it's resonant with that field of love, what the Buddhists call, may all beings be happy.
Nice. That's wonderful, actually. Yeah.
And it reminds us, you know, again, we have, what is human nature? And human nature is many things. And human nature really depends on what we put in the foreground and what we put in the background. We all have the potential to be hijacked by violence, to be hijacked by fear. And yet it's called the illusion of separation, when the truth and reality is we're all connected. And in this society where there is no initiation, not even the bar mitzvah, not even getting your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
There's no initiation. And children are in the hospital system, separated from their connection with their mothers at a very early age, so that they don't get that field of well-being, so that they don't get all is well, all is well, all is well, so that as young children and adults, they begin to look outside themselves. What can I get from the world rather than what can I give to the world?
Mm-hmm.
If you're already filled, if you're already connected, then all you're thinking about is how can I share the joy?
Mm-hmm.
If
how can I contribute what I really am and what I have? Yeah,
exactly. But mm-hmm. if you've been separated and fragmented, and you've been you've learned at an early age that you had to really compromise who you really are in mm-hmm. order to get love or in order to be safe, then, you know, we are a society of hungry ghosts who are looking to what can I get? What can I get?
So where do we go from here then? I mean, we know that a lot of this stuff is not jarring to me. I understand that. That's wonderful. But where do we go from here? The turmoil is far too great. Is Trump going to take over the country and be a dictator forever? And the Republicans apparently are breaking up over him in some ways, but I don't see that showing up quite yet.
Well, I think that there's a few things that are going on. First of all, Trump will eventually be destroyed by his own psyche.
Okay.
And, you know, it's inevitable, and it's just hard to say how much damage will be done in the interim.
Mm-hmm.
But
can we not offset that potential damage? Can we not gather together? Can we not, you know, form cohesive groups?
The only worthwhile way of gathering together is to actually move past resistance to intention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like spiritual cliches, but one spiritual principle that really seems to bear up over experience is what you resist persists.
Yes, it sure does.
That you strengthen whatever it is that you resist.
Mm-hmm.
So why was, you know, the mainstream media essentially created Donald Trump. Every time his name is mentioned, even if it's mentioned in hatred, his energy is enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
What is required right now is something that the progressive people have not been willing to do, or maybe not been able to do.
Or not known how yet.
Mm-hmm. Not knowing how to do, because I think that over 5,000 years of being ruled by the lowest common denominator, most of us are subconsciously programmed with the idea that it's a me or you world.
Yeah.
And that if we use kinesiology, which many people listening are familiar with, and you took people who are very earnest and activist, active peace activists, or climate change activists, if you were to do a muscle test with them, I believe that we will create world peace. Doink, their muscles will test weak for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is so much programming, so much of our history, so many of our stories are about dominate or be dominated.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that is most needed right now is not pushing against Donald Trump, but pulling way past him.
Yeah.
In that, finding that compelling future, the we're all in this together, the thrival for all, for what would it look like if we had a world at work for all? What would it feel like if we got up in the morning and we recognized that we're all cells in the body of one organism called humanity?
Mm-hmm.
What would that feel like? What would that feel like? And so the most effective way to use the Donald Trump presidency, to use the situation that we're in right now, the way to use that is to not to ignore Trump, not to pretend he's not there, but to really speak our truth through him and past him. I'll give you an example. I'm from New York, and New Yorkers are noted for their bluntness. And I haven't lived there in many years. So about now, it's been maybe 30 years ago, I went back to visit, and a friend and I went to a movie theater. We went to see a movie. I think it was Raging Bull, as a matter of fact. And we come to a seat, and there's a guy sitting in between two empty seats. And I said, "Excuse me, would you mind moving over so my friend and I could sit next to each other?" And he looked at me, and he goes, "Look, I didn't come here to be a nice guy." And I went, "Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm in New York." So my friend and I sat on either side of the guy, and we talked through him like he wasn't there. And finally, he got up and moved. So we need to talk through Donald Trump. We don't need to talk to him. There's nothing to say to him. We need to talk through him.
But there is a collaborative effort across the aisle with Democrats and Republicans to bring forward a health care plan, right?
Well,
I thought that was kind of a sign of something good happening, maybe.
Well, I think, unfortunately, the healthcare plan will continue to be unhealthy and uncaring because it doesn't take into consideration the elephant and the donkey in the living room, and that is that both political parties are being paid and subsidized by the drug companies, the insurance companies.
Oh, geez.
So reason why our healthcare system is more expensive and less effective than most other industrialized countries is that it's run as a for-profit enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislators on both sides of the aisle have to be careful to dance around that issue because they're not answerable to the American people. They're answerable to the special interests that contribute or don't contribute to their campaign fund. So the effort to work across the aisle, just as Obamacare was, it's an ineffective system that doesn't take into consideration that the system is being run for the drug companies. It doesn't take into consideration that the drug companies are suppressing natural cures. It doesn't take into consideration that many of these alternatives are much, much, much less expensive and less invasive.
And more empowering on every level.
More empowering. Okay, mm-hmm. So when you're looking at the healthcare system as it is right now, you know, while in the short term, it certainly we don't want people to lose what coverage they have. Most of the efforts of the two political parties to work together have been to patch up a system that has failed, that's obsolete and obsoletal, which is a system where only money matters. And until we really get the spiritual at the core of our society.
But how do we do that, Steve? How do we do that?
Well, I'm working with some really interesting people at the Transpartisan Alliance. And one of the things that's happening through various churches and so on is an ecumenical movement to restore the sacred.
Wonderful.
At the center, you know, and we see I'm working with an Episcopal priest. The Unitarians are at it. Some evangelicals, Michael Dowd, who wrote a wonderful book called Thank God for Evolution. And he's an evangelical Christian. His wife is an atheist scientist.
Oh, wow. Good.
And so I think that these are the things that are not being reported.
There's Can I have the name of it again? It's the
Transpartisan Alliance that is emerging right now to inform many of the things that are going on between that are bringing people on all sides into respectful conversation. There's also a group called Living Room Conversations that was started by Joan Blades from Move On, the progressive activist group, and Amanda Roman, who is a young conservative activist. And they are empowering conversations, living room conversations, to first rehumanize the other, and second, to begin conversations that focus on what we have in common, what we can build together, rather than the things that separate us. You know, those are not going to go away. But when we put the things in common in the foreground, we find that 75 to 90% of us agree on virtues and values. We may not agree on abortion, we may not agree on gay marriage, but we agree that our government should be honest. We agree that our police should not be militarized. We agree that we should not be bombing and killing civilians overseas. There's been a very interesting conservative and progressive anti-war movement that nobody knows about.
Oh, that's what I want to know about. I want to see a lot of us. I would like to belong to something that becomes a large movement and a demonstration which is peaceful. And you're giving us some ideas here.
Those alliances have been happening, but unfortunately, people tend to be pulled back into their tribe. And because we've been so programmed with the lesser evil meme that we feel obliged to defend the evil that we voted for.
Yeah.
So progressives tend to defend Hillary, and a lot of conservatives, people I know who voted for Donald Trump, they cannot really bring themselves to really look at his evil and toxicity because he is the lesser evil compared to Hillary, as they would say.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm worried that we're going to end before I ask you this really huge question, which is, do you think that the disruptions going on are going to devastate the Constitution, the foundation of America? Is it time for a complete renewal? And what do you think about all that? Because sometimes I wonder, there's no other way, really.
I know the conservatives have been talking about a constitutional convention that have the progressives terrified.
Okay.
I think we need a movement of we the people. I did buy this this domain called Independent Citizens United, or ICU.
Oh, good one.
I think we need a citizens union that overgrows the current two-party monopoly because – you know, 43% of people in 2015 identified themselves as independents. And at that point, only 30% identified as Democrats and 25% as Republicans. So people tend to, when election time comes around, they want to vote for one of the two candidates who could win. And so they will vote for the lesser evil candidate. If there is an independent organization of citizens who recognized that neither of the two political parties fully represent their interests. And there is a way for people to actually have a voice and a vote beyond the two-party system. They will go there. One final piece. My friend and colleague, Richard Lang, owner of a company called Democrasoft.
It's called Democrasoft?
Democrasoft, yes. Mm-hmm. He won a, I think it was like a $60 million lawsuit against Microsoft.
Oh, wow.
Infringed on him. And so he started his company, Democrasoft. And their entire purpose is to create a national town square. Richard's
book, that's a wonderful idea.
Town Square is coming out late this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that every individual who chooses will have a verifiable voice and vote.
Wow.
So that they can vote on any issue and they can have their vote counted. So when this scales up, you know, when you have 25 or 50 million Americans saying, I think industrial hemp should be legalized, mm-hmm. or I think we should find ways to take money out of politics and people back in,
yes,
or we should end corporate personhood, or we should curb GMO proliferation, or on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Then
just the basic things that we need, yes, to make a good country.
But we don't have any way for all of these people to aggregate and congregate in one place.
Okay.
And as soon as that happens, we will be able to counterbalance a two-party tyranny.
Well, so back to you. You're doing something called Wiki Politics. Can you want to? Is this a perfect time to throw that in?
Yeah, it is, because it's a radio podcast. It's actually three things. It's a radio podcast. It's a website where we show signs of the uprising as people are waking up and rising up, and it's also a place where we have a library of constructive conversations called Conversations for Co-Creation with people who really have solutions. There are so many of these, and what's happened is we've been so focused on the problem, and that so many of the institutions that are designed to fight the problem actually are self-perpetuating by perpetuating the problem. So, you know, somebody called me years ago saying, I'm collecting for heart disease. I go, I'm sorry, I'm against it. Because what happens is you keep the problem in place by fighting against the problem.
Fighting against the problem, right.
If cancer disappeared, what would happen to the American Cancer Institute?
Exactly. But that's the whole thing, and you really stressed that well with the whole thing about pharmaceuticals. I think most of us are going like, oh my God, you know. America has the best help for people medically and the worst system for anybody who doesn't have a ton of moolah.
And even the best help. I mean, the third, if you're conservative about it, and don't say it's the first leading cause of death in this country, you know what the third leading cause of death is?
I do not, but I'd like to.
Mm-hmm. Iatrogenic condition. That is being killed by medicine itself. Reactions to drugs, infections caught while in hospitals,
mm-hmm.
mistreatment of conditions. So the third leading cause of death in the United States is medicine itself.
Wow.
This has been true for many years, by the way.
I know. When I was studying health foods, we knew that then. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was in the 70s, so that it's not changed a lot.
It's still true. Mm-hmm. Now, more and more people are taking advantage of healthy alternatives. But did you know that here in the state of California, the most progressive state in the union, that vaccinations are now mandatory?
I know. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And why did that happen? Was that a money thing?
It's because of the pharmaceutical industry.
That's what I
wanted. In cahoots with the Center of Disease Control,
mm-hmm.
that have totally stonewalled any objections to vaccinations or associating it with autism or other conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And those people who've had the experience, they know that the vaccination was a factor in mm-hmm. their child's mm-hmm. lack of development and so on. And there's even, if you want to see the movie, The Truth About Vaccinations, that's really a very worthwhile documentary.
It's called Vaxxed, isn't it?
Well, Vaxxed is a documentary, but The Truth About Vaccinations is a 7-part documentary that you can probably Google online and find out how to either watch it episode by episode or download it.
Well, I just want to throw in one thing. In all the discussions about vaccinations that I hear people screaming and all that, I go, why don't they just stop binding, first of all, putting so many in at a time, because there's interactions with them, and binding them up with mercury and aluminum and things like that. I mean, hello.
The people who were interviewed in the Truth About Vaccination, many of these were doctors who believed in vaccination. But who had objections to those exact things, to the mercury and mm-hmm. other toxins, and who had the objection of starting them so young. When you begin to look at the kinds of money that is made and the kinds of money that is not made when doctors don't do the vaccinations, when they're taken off the approved doctors list and blacklisted because they don't follow these protocols that are dangerous to children,
mm-hmm.
So I think that one of the very unfortunate aspects of quote unquote fake news is that the mainstream media may be telling the truth about the Russians interfering with our election. But because they have not told the truth about vaccination, because they have not told the truth about so many other
things. About GMOs,
mm-hmm. fracking, and so on.
And fracking,
that
they've
lost their credibility, and they're susceptible to charlatans like Steve Bannon mm-hmm. and the Trump people who take advantage of that and infuse other lies under the radar.
Well, it's really interesting because they've taken the media to push people's brains and this corral people's thinking, and now that distortion has really been amped up. It's worse than it's ever been. Thank you to that particular, that style of using media.
And believe it or not, the progressives are just as rigid about pro-vaccination as these people are against it.
Hmm.
Because again, if you're part of a tribe, you want to go along with the tribe rather than think for yourself. And so as we get something like the National Town Square, where people can really have a voice and a vote and communicate across party lines without the distortion of the media and without being coached by their tribe and being
lobbied
yeah, mm-hmm. by their silo, yeah, then you're actually going to see people learning from one another rather than trying to shout one another down.
So how do we join that, and is there a fee, and do we go through WikiPolitiki? And
well, what you want to do is you want to contact me at info@wakeuplaughing.com. We haven't set up the wiki. We haven't fully set up the WikiPolitiki website yet.
Okay.
And then it'll be that once we launch WikiPolitiki as a website, as a podcast, and as a series of interviews, we can then begin to talk about how we empower and create an actual citizens' union. That's something that it's certainly my idea, but I'm not an organizer of things like that, and it's something that's going to require quite a bit of collaboration.
But I think that just talking about it the way you do, people feel a heart opening that wants to draw them to it. A lot of people are looking for a way to band together somehow. So maybe that'll organize it for you. Who knows, eh?
And the future is in love and community. That's our future.
It has to be, doesn't it, Steve? Steve Behrman, you are so inspiring as well as full of information. So you've got me going, I'll tell you what. And this is Paradigm Shifter saying thank you for paying attention to this amazing Paradigm Shifter. And tune into our podcasts as well, and you'll be able to receive Steve Behrman speaking about independent citizens united and so many more aspects about today's politics. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Veronica,
thank
for doing
you.
What you do.
Okay, talk again. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.